All right. Quinn, thank you. Man. All right, common unity. How are we doing? You know it's a common unity when somebody can... Akash, where are you? Thank you. That's an expression of common unity where somebody can stand up and share so honestly and so humbly and so vulnerably, and people can just express love back. That's a common unity. It is a common unity when somebody can lead us in prayer and it can be so authentic and real and beautiful. And there's like a loudness in the silence when we get together and pray like that. And I'm just really honored to get to be invited into it and that the common unity is able to grow and that I'm able to be here. Joe, thank you again. Appreciate it. Oh, you want me to unlock it? You don't know my password? Here's my opening question for you guys. Thank you. Is there ever a time in your life when you've been busted? Caught red-handed in the act? Think about it as a child. You're younger than 10. When was the time you got caught for doing something you know you shouldn't have? Some of you are kind of looking in the distance. Some of you are smiling. You remember. I gave my mom the finger. Both fingers. I didn't know what it meant. Don't judge. She wanted me to go downstairs and get the laundry out of the dryer. I didn't want to. I wanted to eat Lucky Charms, and I wanted to watch Saturday morning cartoons. She asked me once. I didn't go do it. She asked me twice. I didn't go do it. She asked me a third time. She screamed from the back of the house. And I remember just flipping her off. Both birds, double barrels. Had no idea what it meant. And she walked by. And the look in her eyes, I was busted. And the wooden from the kitchen solidified the deal that I was in fact busted. But I've got another story for you where I was busted. I was with my daughter, Haley, the one who was here. She had to go home because selfish her has got to go back to college. And we were in Phoenix as a family, and she's a hiker, and she's like, hey, Dad, can we get up early and go for a hike? I'm like, yeah, I'm all in. So we wake up. It's a beautiful Phoenix morning, and it's like that February, March, so it's kind of cool, but you know it's going to get hot. So we get in our car, and windows go down, moonroof goes back. Haley, do you want to put on some music? Yeah, Dad, I do. She turns on Pitbull. So now we are riding up the hill. We're getting ready to go to the trailhead, and it's just going to be the best day ever. And we're cruising up, and it's just like a back road, 40 miles an hour, and we're just chilling and we're talking. Traffic light, like the police light. What's it called? Speeding ticket light. What is it called? What's it called? You've gotten a lot of them. I got a flash ticket. And now I'm just upset because I'm like, well, isn't that entrapment, lawyer? I don't feel like this is right. So now I'm just mad and I'm upset and I'm like, I think I got a ticket and I don't want to pay this. And my daughter's thinking this is going to be the worst hike ever with her angry dad. But sure enough, I got a ticket and the state of Arizona was nice enough to send it to me. So we get to the trailhead, and I'm like, all right, Dad, you got to play it cool. You got to hang in there because you're trying to redeem this nice moment with your daughter. Pull it together. We have this wonderful hike up to the top. We get beautiful pictures. I remember the conversation the whole way. She was telling me about some books she's reading and movies, and it was just the best conversation. We get back down. It's going to be a beautiful day. Windows go down. Moonroof goes back. Pitbull's back on. And we're heading down. I think we're going back down a different road. We're not. And I'm just so lost in the music and lost in the moment with my daughter that, same road, two tickets, same day. What an idiot. I felt so stupid. And now it's to the point where I'm just laughing. And again, thanks to Arizona, they even gave me like a wallet-sized version that I could take. Like, there was no way I could get out of it. I was caught. I was busted. And a lot of us can relate to being busted and caught in the act. Well, this morning I want to transition. Jesus and another outcast. Somebody that was so busted in the moment, and then they are thrown in front of Jesus, and it is a very tense, angry, awkward scenario and situation. Way worse and more like embarrassing and painful than the speeding tickets. And it's Jesus and somebody known as the woman caught in adultery. And this is from John 8. It says, early in the morning, Jesus was back again at the temple. A crowd gathered and he sat down and he taught them. As he was speaking, the teachers of religious law and the religious leaders, they brought a woman who had been caught in the act of adultery and they put her in front of the crowd. Adultery. If you want to talk about cancel culture, first century cancel culture, she was brought in front of a crowd of people, locals, maybe friends, and it's at the temple. Imagine being caught doing something and you were brought to church. Whoa. I can't even fathom. Teacher, they said to Jesus, this woman was caught in the act of adultery. Now, our law says to stone her, but what do you say? Jesus, she deserves the death penalty. We want to pick up rocks and start throwing them. She deserves to die. But this wasn't about the woman. This was a setup. They weren't after her. They were after Jesus. This was a trap to try and catch him. Because they're like, how are you going to work your way out of this? Jesus. They were trying to trap him into saying something they could use against him. But it says, Jesus stooped down and he wrote in the dust with his finger. Now, what's amazing about this moment and what I love about it is by physically going down, he takes the eyes off of her. Imagine the looks of the men as they're looking at this woman caught in adultery. Imagine the looks of the women that are looking at her being caught in adultery. I can't imagine the embarrassment, just the horrific nature of how she's feeling. Here she is, like at church in front of maybe friends, in front of maybe family. Just trying to scramble any dignity. But Jesus goes down and he takes all the attention off of her and on to himself. And I love that he does that. Because there is so much hot tension in this moment. Put yourself in the crowd. What would that look like? Imagine the looks on the faces. Put yourself in her shoes. In front of Jesus, visible image of the invisible God, the radical intervention of the incarnation, there is hot tension. And these people that are trying to trap Jesus, what is he going to do? Is he going to do anything? Is he going to say anything? Do we get to pick up the rocks? It keeps going. They kept demanding an answer. So now he stood up and he said, all right, but let the one who has never sinned throw the first stone. I love this idea of standing up. He's standing up, in a way, for her. Not for the act, for her. And now he's standing up and he speaks on behalf. He's an active advocate, advoca, to speak on her behalf. And what's amazing is he flips the whole thing. You guys, this isn't about her. Stop looking at her. Stop worrying about her. What about you? Now the moment is really tense because he flipped it. And in so doing, he throws a huge, that three-letter word, of sin. When I think of sin, I think of misalignment. So I have shoulder issues in my left shoulder. So this is what a normal shoulder looks like. Like this is what your shoulder looks like. All right, but I was still trying to play lacrosse. I played in high school, played in college, and I was still trying to play until age 40. Not smart whatsoever. I don't recommend it. But I was playing basically in a pickup league, and I'd always had shoulder pains and what I always would call stingers. But I'm playing and I'm being physical on this guy. Let's see if I can. There it is, and it goes out. I'd never had it go out before, but I knew it was out because it hurt like nothing else. I felt like I'd gotten stabbed, and I fall on the ground, and I'm saying, it's out, it's out. And there's a guy that's like, don't worry, I'm a doctor. And he comes over, and he's like, so if we just do this, nothing. It just worse pain. So the guys are like, all right, so the doctor has no idea what he's doing. So they get me in a truck. They take me down to Fairview Southdale to the ER, and I'm in a ton of pain. They're like, we're going to get you in quicker. So they take me in and they put me in front of a standing x-ray. So I'm just standing there and they take one picture straight on. All right. Now, this is what a normal dislocation looks like. It's obvious. The ball and socket, it comes down right below kind of the pectoral and the shoulder slumps. It is obvious when a shoulder is out of place. But this is my dislocation. 9 out of 10 shoulders come forward, but mine went backward. And these ER doctors, when they're looking at the picture, that doesn't look much different. So they said, Mr. Swanda, we have no idea why you're in so much pain. We're sorry. It's in, like, the pictures. We can see everything is in place. So here's some pills to make you feel better. Here is a sling to hold you together. We hope everything turns out okay. I knew things weren't okay, but I'd never had a dislocated shoulder, so I trusted them, went with the pills, took the pills, went with the sling, wore the sling. Later that night, I finally fell asleep on the couch, and I guess it slid into place. Same exact thing happened 3 months later in Colorado. Dislocate my shoulder, it's out, ER, take the picture. There's nothing we can do for you. Here's some pills to make you feel better. Here's a sling to hold you together. And they sent me on my way based upon what they could see. Their solutions were not going to fix my issue. When Jesus talks about sin, it is a big problem for this crowd. He raises it right up to the top. It's not about her, it's about you. It is about our condition. For all of us, every one of us is busted. And when I think of my shoulder, it was all about misalignment. It was like, it looked like it was in place, but it was totally misaligned. And when I think about sin in our world, I picture misalignment. In Romans, it says, you know the story of how we landed in this dilemma we're in. First sin, then death. And no one is exempt from either sin or death. That sin, it disturbed relations with God in everything and everyone. But the extent of the disturbance wasn't clear until God spelled it out, death. This huge abyss separating us from God. Ignatius of Loyola, his definition of sin was an unwillingness to trust that what God wants for me is only my deepest happiness. Unwilling to take the best, that life to the full, that Jesus, that our God, our loving Creator, so desperately wants for us. It's not our actions, it is just the desire and the fight for power and control. It is our ongoing fight with God. That is the misalignment in us. That is the misalignment in our world. And we see it again and again. If you pull up your phone and you start going to your Instagram feed, your Facebook feed, your TikTok feed. You know who you are, Bob Tinsley. Active on TikTok, by the way. Phenomenal content. But when you open it up, you will see and you will scroll and you will see misalignment, brokenness, hurt, pain, death. We see it all the time. We see it all the time, the brokenness and the misalignment in our world. And so the crowd is there, and they're saying, well, Jesus, she did this. A price needs to be paid. We got the price. It's right here, and it's in these rocks. And for the misalignment in our world, we recognize a price still needs to be paid. And thank God that he does something for the problem. We'll talk about that at dinner tonight. I was asked by some teenagers because when I talk about sin at camp, there'll be some kids and they'll say, well, wait a minute, like, what about the whole hell thing? Now, I'm not going to break down the theology of hell, but all I know is, like, I went for a walk this morning and it is just gorgeous and it is beautiful. And then I saw the kids and I heard the laughter and I'm seeing the smiles and I'm getting high fives and pats on the back. And I got to hug my wife and my children this morning. And the beauty in the world, like, when you scroll, there's so much beauty but there's also so much death. And when teens ask me about this complete separation and the idea of hell, I say, all I know is I picture our world without any of the beautiful things that I gravitate to. And all I see is the darkness and the hatred and the racism and the classism and the sexism and the brutality. That's that misalignment in our world. But what if sin is actually not bad news? Throw a curveball at you. What if this word sin is actually good news? What if it's actually a diagnosis for the thing that we know is broken? We see it all the time. What if it actually is finally the label for what we know is messed up? Because once there's a diagnosis, that means something can be done about it. When I was 28, I had my first seizure. I was holding my baby boy, Will. He was about 6 months old, taking a nap. I think it was like a Sunday afternoon. So I'm doing just the dad thing. We'd been up late at night, and it was just so sweet. We fell asleep, and he's on my chest. But Ashley's in the kitchen, and she starts to hear like the moaning and the groaning from my seizure. And she comes out, and I'm shaking, but I'm still holding Will, and now he's crying. And the first thing I remember is there was an EMT, and he was in my face. And I just remember him asking questions. And apparently, I answered no to all of them. And it was like, do you know where you are? No. Do you know who this is? Pointed at Will. No. Do you know a couple other things? The only thing that I knew was that Ashley was my wife, but I didn't know anything. That was seizure one. I've had about 9. The last one was about 10 years ago. And after every one, they would do a different series of tests. They would rule out, okay, so it's not a brain tumor. Okay, it's not this. It's not this. And I would do sleep scans, and they would put up all the neurons or the neurodes or the cathodes. Lawyer? I don't know. You know them all. They would do tests and tests and tests. And ultimately, they said, the best we can figure is your seizures emanate from here. And there's a specific pill. So I take, you know, a couple thousand milligrams of pills a day. But they said, we know where your seizures emanate from, and it's just an electrical overload. But at least now we know what we can do with it. A diagnosis, once something is named, it can actually be a good thing because then something can be done about it. And the first time I ever heard that concept of what if the label of sin actually isn't bad news, but it's good news because then we know that there is a solution, that kind of rocked my world and blew my mind. Because in the tense, hot moment of the crowd and the woman, Jesus throws that word out. He's like, it's not about her, it's about you as well. And he's calling out us as well. Then Jesus stooped down again and he wrote in the dust. And when the accusers heard this, they slipped away one by one, beginning with the oldest, until only Jesus was left in the middle of the crowd with the woman. They tried to trap him, but he flipped it on them. He called them out. He put the diagnosis out there. And one by one, people slipped away and left the scene. But they left too early. They actually missed the best part in how this story is going to wrap up. And for us, it's important that we stay in the crowd, that we stay in the crowd there, present, and don't leave. What if they had stayed curious? What if they had seen, is Jesus going to do something? He does. And in verse 10 and 11, Jesus turns to her. Everybody's gone. Jesus stood up again, and he said to the woman, where are your accusers? Didn't even one of them condemn you? Oh, Lord, she said, and Jesus said, then neither do I. Go and sin no more. He wasn't condoning the lifestyle, but man, he spoke up and loved her. He was for her, stood for her, beside her, represented for her in that situation. Hey, Pete, would you do me a favor? Would you just wheel the pottery over here? Thank you. Blaise Pascal, another great quote. French philosopher from the 1600s. There's a God-shaped hole in the heart of each man and woman which can't be satisfied by any created thing, thank you, but only by God the Creator made known through Jesus. So if there's a God-shaped hole and we have our pot and we know what we're designed for, this life to the full and overflowing, but what this passage indicates and what happens in our world is we keep trying, maybe with appearance, maybe with status, maybe with jobs, substances, relationships, friend groups, volunteerism, boards. We keep filling and filling and filling but ultimately left empty. There's a God-shaped hole, a hole in our lives and in our hearts that can only be filled by one thing. And that's God, our good, loving, creative creator. When I was in, I picture high school, Andy, picture your high school self. We already talked about your young 10-year-old self. This was me. I filled my life every day with basically sports, grades, and girls, affection, achievement, and athletics. Think about yourself at age 17. What did you try and fill your life with? What did you try and fill your heart with? Because we all did it. But what about today's metrics, right? Think about the party. Hey, what do you do? Instantly try and go for status, career, importance. Oh, really? That's great. Where do you live? Now we're measuring maybe by like the neighborhood, maybe the socioeconomic, the house. Oh, do you have kids? What do they do? Then we as parents are so selfish that we get our self-worth by what our kids do and maybe how good they are. We keep trying and trying to find our identity in something that will last. We are all filling our lives with something. And we have to ask our questions, is what I'm filling my life with, will it last? Will it truly fulfill the needs of my heart? Will it love me back? Because our lives aren't whole. They're damaged by sin, and we can try and try and try, but it'll only leave us broken. Are you serious? I have never... Are you ready? Close your eyes, because I'm going to drop it on the wood. There we go. Has never happened before. It's because it's carpet. With the things we fill our lives with, this is our world, isn't it? Think of the death. Think of the horror. Think of the sadness. Think of the abuse. What we were made for was life to the full. But in our world, this is where we are left. That's what Jesus was calling out in the crowd, and that's what Jesus is saying to us. This sin diagnosis, this misalignment in our world, that's ultimately what we are left with and what we settle for. But again, the truth about sin, I put it to you, it's not bad news, because then something can be done about it, and that'll come in the way of the cross. Because of sin, I think we are left is just trying to survive and trying to make it through another day, another week, another season, another fiscal year. We're just trying to survive. There's a great movie. I like going to movies that really are hard to watch, that make you think, that make you feel, even if they're things you don't want to feel. And I went and I saw 12 Years a Slave, and I wanted to go alone. I just wanted to sit there, and I just wanted to take it in. And it is a hard movie to watch. It's a true story of a freed black man from the North. He was from New York, named Solomon Northrup. And he is lured. He was a musician with a wife and a family. And he is lured into the D.C. area for a job. But then there he is trapped and he is sold into horrific slave conditions in the Deep South. And it details over a decade now of his life in these horrible, abusive conditions. Terrible work environment. And then towards the end of the movie, there comes to a point where Solomon, he just so badly, he wants to be with his family. That's where he should be. He is a freed man. He was created for so much more than what he's doing. And he starts to get agitated, and he lives in this small house with other men that were trapped and sold into slavery. And he starts to get agitated, and he's to the point where he's just done. This isn't how it's supposed to be. I shouldn't be here. And he starts to get more agitated, and his voice starts to get louder. And the men around him say, Solomon, you got to keep your voice down. If you don't, they will come. We will be beaten. We will forced to do more work. You got to understand, we are trying to survive in here. And Solomon, he goes, I don't want to survive. I want to live. We see the brokenness. We see the death. We see the misalignment. And in our world, we so badly in our hearts want to live. Not this. We were created for life to the full. But our world leaves us in this. But if Jesus was an active advocate and he could stand up for the woman, that means he can stand up for me and for you. And we'll pick up there tonight. Jesus, thank you for my friends. It is a gorgeous day at Grandview. I pray that we would enjoy beautiful, beautiful moments as a common unity. And that this would be a day where great things would happen in the lives of our families, with our friendships. Thank you for what you do, how you see us, and how you want to be a part intimately of each and every one of our lives and our stories. In your name, amen.